I'm Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. The year is 1974. The album, Henry I, the artist Kenneth Mars, written by Earl Dowd, and my guest this week is Will Harris. Thanks so much for doing the show.
Oh, my pleasure. Glad we're finally able to make this happen.
I know, it's taken a while. So, because you introduced this to me forever ago, and it was long enough that, like, it was several record store trips in. I actually, because normally I would just, I'd either buy it on eBay or something, but I eventually stumbled upon this in an actual store. And it's, first of all, so just so people know, it is about Henry Kissinger. It is an excuse to have Kenneth Mars, who people might know from The Producers, they might know from Young Frankenstein, play Henry Kissinger in a kind of First Family style. Because, you know, Earl Dowd being involved with the First Family. The cover's by Al Hirschfeld, number one, which is, and it's brilliant. God, it's good. I don't know if it was done for the album or not. Do you, how much do you know about this album? Was this one that you stumbled across or what?
This is what I stumbled across and knew Earl Dowd's name because my parents, like everyone's parents at that time, had a copy of the First Family. And then I had stumbled into The First Family Rides Again. And then after that, I think it was not long after that that I discovered this in some thrift store or other, which is like, what in the hell is this?
Yeah. what was, you know, I mean, you were a kid. So what was your knowledge of, what was the most interesting part of this then, I guess? Like, what made you want to listen? Did you know who Kenny Mars was? Did you know just who Earl Dowd was? How much did you know about Henry Kissinger as a kid?
Virtually nothing about Henry Kissinger.
Yeah.
Mostly it was on the name of Earl Dowd that it grabbed me. Mm-hmm. And then I did know a little about Kenneth Mars, although I am at a loss at this moment to tell you why I knew him. I don't think it was from, I'm sure it was not either from Young Frankenstein or The Producers. It was probably from some guest spot he did on a sitcom or
a
voice for some cartoon. It can't possibly have been actual legitimately good movies.
Wait, were you an underexposed? Okay, you know what? You were like the ultimate pop culture nerd. I'm now curious why you hadn't seen those yet. What was there a lack of exposure due to your parents?
I'm going to say probably when I discovered that, I was early teens maybe, and you have to figure this, that would have been 83, 84.
Mm-hmm.
So I was renting a lot of stuff on VHS, but most of it was the brand new stuff that was coming out. I wasn't doing much in the way of deep dives at the time.
Okay, that makes sense.
Within a few years, I would definitely be well-versed in the Mel Brooks catalog at that point.
Oh, I imagine. I'm just realizing on the back there's actually a Hirschfeld of Earl Dowd. So he was famous enough or knew Al Hirschfeld well enough to have a picture of himself done, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's saying something.
Right? Do you still have the do you have the actual vinyl? I can't remember.
I do actually still have it, yeah. And then I found someone who had done a probably not entirely legit CD release of it.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, you know, I've run across a lot of people who, I mean, I know that like a lot of some releases like through Laugh Factory and stuff, or Laugh.com, sorry, a lot of those are like cleaned up rips of vinyl. So that's kind of how they made, because nobody has access to the masters unless they want to pay a mint for it.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what this was.
That's so interesting. Huh. That's funny. Now, this is it's a weird album. Like, there's no doubt that this is a very strange one. What's your first memory of giving it a listen? Did you like it, or was it more of a curiosity?
I liked it, even though I had no frame of reference to any of the references whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I just thought that Kenneth Mars sounded funny when he was doing,
doing
Kissinger. And then by the time I got to Taking Care of Business, the final track on side A, I was sold, although not really for the comedy as much as just, I don't know what this is.
I think that's what you sent to me, be like, hey, here's a weird fucking album, but here's your sample. And I'm like, what the hell am I listening to?
Yes, but you don't expect to hear someone doing a version of Bachman Turner Overdrive's Taking Care of Business as Henry Kissinger.
No. Taking Care of Business. Like, it's just so... And it's weird, too, that he's so well known for just doing a great German accent. That was his bread and butter. I mean, even when he was on, he guested on a bunch of Malcolm in the Middles, again, as a German dude.
Yes, exactly.
So I don't know. That's what people know him best as. And I think at that point, it's like, hey, can you do the voice you did in Young Frankenstein? Can you do this? But it's such a weird place in history to have.
Yeah, and just like I say, I keep coming back to that cover, the BTO cover. You get up every morning, you're not morning.
Oh, that's so perfect. Did you ever get to interview him during his lifetime or no?
I did not. He would have been an amazing Random Rules
interview. Oh, of course. Oh, damn it. Let's talk about this real quick, though. Like, what, in terms of adjacent, I mean, I don't know if you interviewed, like, Mel Brooks, Carl Reiner, any of the Mel Brooks adjacent folks?
I've actually interviewed both of them. I've interviewed Mel for the AV Club, and then I interviewed Carl for Vanity Fair's website. And then because of that, I also got a quote from Mel about Carl.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so that was cool.
Oh, so good. I'm always so jealous. But you know what? It's also like every time I'm like, I also couldn't have done the interview that well. So I don't get that jealous. I always love the stuff you put together. Is this an album on re-listen? What are your thoughts about it now? It's now, what, 45 years old this year. So what are your thoughts on it now?
My thought is that it's no First Family.
That is true. That is true.
I mean, it is the definition of an artifact of its time. Because, yeah. I mean, at what other time could someone in that particular position in government warrant an entire album of their life and times and voice?
Right. I mean, now it would be on an ephemeral. It would just be on a bunch of late night sketch stuff. And then you'd forget it the second everybody else had forgotten about it. They wouldn't spend the time writing it, performing it in front of people, committing it to vinyl. Holy cow.
Exactly. It would be a YouTube channel at best.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Although, you know, it's funny too. It is no First Family, but I mean, Earl Dowd even goes out of his way to reference the First Family with him playing in the tub and referencing the U-boats joke from the original
album.
Yep. Ooh, boy, oh boy. He's like, don't forget. I did the First Family. Remember? It's like, oh, come on, buddy. Yeah, we don't forget. We forget. We remember. You're fine. I do often wonder, like, what these guys, like, what their careers were like or what their personal lives were like, because they had the biggest selling album of all time and then just constantly trying to recreate that success. I don't know. It feels like a scramble to, like, to continue to be relevant. But at the same time, they're also still making some good stuff, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely some merit to it. And I can't imagine anyone who enjoys political comedy from that era, just in general, wouldn't still get a laugh out of listening to it.
For sure.
Yeah. Admittedly, it's going to suffer because of the fact that it's got that First Family connection, and that was kind of the defining record for that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still very much worth a listen, if only maybe just the one.
Right, yeah. Well, and you can there's at least the element of musical comedy where it's going to survive a few more listens than maybe the regular sketches do. You know, you can at least listen to the songs again.
Right. I mean, and yes, side B, I should note, closes with the Hucklebuck.
There's...
Which itself is no taking care of business.
Right. So this is another thing is this is a gatefold album, and they do the one thing that I think a lot of these albums would benefit from, full track list of on the left side, a full track list with some liner notes, a listing everybody who plays everybody so that you know. But then on the right hand side, there are pictures of everybody performing their parts or their headshots. And while there are probably some people here who you know better than I do because your pop culture knowledge is higher, I would like to list a few of the highlights. So you've got your Kenneth Mars, but then starting off the list is Mel Blanc. For Christ's sake, you've got Rich Little. You've got Frank Welker, genius. You have Peter Fonda, of all people, is in this. Chuck McCann, who's also famous from the First Family and a ton of other things. Then a bunch of other people who I maybe should know, but I'm guessing you would have a better knowledge of who they are.
And I actually do not have the LP right in front of me.
Oh, okay. I can list some names. Yeah. We got Marvin Kaplan. I know the face. I feel like maybe laughing.
Marvin Kaplan, he was in It's a Mad World.
Right, okay.
Alice is where he's probably best known.
Okay, okay. A gentleman named Fuddle Bagley, which is an amazing name.
I want to say he's like a vaudeville guy. I know the name, but I'm not really familiar.
Kerry Brooks?
Nah, that one's not ringing a bell.
Okay, Jesse White. I know the man's face.
Yes, Jesse White was, I mean, he was predominantly an ad pitch man by the time I got around to knowing who he was. Mm-hmm. But I want to say, the Maytag Repairman. That's who he was.
Oh, okay.
Fame, yeah.
All right. Ed Peck.
Ed Peck, if you ever watched Happy Days, he was the state trooper.
Wow.
Who came on to harass Henry Winkler. But he was in a ton of other things also.
Amazing.
He was, but that's his, again, mainstream claim to fame, I guess.
Randy Kirby. I know that name.
Yeah, I can't recall his claim to fame. I do remember seeing his picture on there. He looked like, he reminded me of the guy from Simon and Simon, the one who isn't Gerald McCraney.
Faye DeWitt. I know the name too, but I don't know who she is.
A voiceover person, I believe. And now I've got my list up here as well now.
Oh, okay, good. We got a couple kids too. There's some children on the album, like actual children, not people playing children.
Well, it's Rich Little.
Rich Little's also on there, yep.
And let's see. Like you said, Peter Fonda. And, of course, the legendary Frank Welker.
Mm-hmm.
And Joan Gerber, I believe, is also a noted voice actor as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. How did I miss Lee French? Lee French is also in there.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Jeez. There's so many, again, a lot of faces that I recognize or names I recognize, but couldn't tell you who the hell they were. But long story short, like, it's a huge cast. This is a cast of 20 some people, 21 people, on a single comedy album. And it feels that way. It's really dense. There's a lot happening.
There absolutely is. And, I would say that some of those names are probably relatively underutilized.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. I mean, for sure, you're going to bring, you know, Mel Blanc as an old man in. You have him do his bits, which, I mean, he does friggin' Bugs Bunny on your album. I mean, that's enough. Let him go home after that.
Exactly.
Holy cow. I mean, that part is probably my favorite part because I'm just like, cool, I get to listen to Mel Blanc do Bugs Bunny, or I get to listen to Frank Welker do the best Donald Duck I've ever heard outside of the actual Donald Duck. Oh, my God. Chuck McCann's Mickey Mouse and Daffy Duck are quite good. And Sylvester. Jesus, Chuck McCann was better at those classic voices than I would have guessed. My God. Mel Blanc is President Ford. There's just, I don't know. That, to me, that's what's fun listening to it, like, because there's some really dated shit on it, but to be expected.
On the back of it, now that I got it pulled up here,
yeah.
It's very funny, I think, that it actually says, Mel Brooks did not work with us, he did not hear the album, he was busy editing The Young Frankenstein, or vice versa. Someday we will do the same for him. He did give us the following to quote, a ring-a-ding, a ding-bang, it's been wonderful working with you, Mel Brooks.
It's brilliant. And it does say that on under the credit for Kenneth Mars, The Young Frankenstein. So it says it on there twice.
Because I think maybe it was not out yet.
And yeah.
So that's what they were led to believe it was going to be called.
That's amazing. That's delightful.
Or they were just completely wrong.
Yeah. Could have been entirely wrong. That's fantastic. Ooh, boy. I mean, again, the reason I think I could probably listen to it again is listening to Kenneth Mars just talking, because I love his voice.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he nails that impression, to say the least.
100%. Holy cow. What's your favorite? What are your favorite bits? They don't have to necessarily be ones that hold up to time, but I'm curious what stuff, or maybe what your favorite stuff was at the time, and maybe if that's changed at all.
Yeah, I think it probably still stays about the same. I think Dinner with the Kissingers, if memory serves, that's a relatively lengthy piece.
Uh-huh.
I think that they had more chance to actually build a piece as opposed to some of these, which were like a minute long or even less, just a quick one-liner, basically.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's true.
So that was a substantial one. And I believe Disneyland was also actually, I think that was the voice spotlight predominantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Were you where did this fall in your comedy education? Were you buying a lot of comedy albums at the time?
Not a lot. I was buying what I would stumble upon at, like, clearance sales, basically. Because, I mean, at that point, vinyl was on its way out. Cassettes were coming in, CDs sure. on their heels. So I definitely was less of vinyl at the time than I was anything else.
Right. Were you, what were the first kind of comedy albums you listened to in general?
First Family was definitely the first, because that was in my parents' collection anyway.
Yeah.
I remember my father had an 8-track cassette of Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy radio show, which I thought was absolutely hysterical.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And at the time, it did not occur to me what a great gig it was to be a ventriloquist on radio.
Right, right.
That's just, it's to this day, I can't believe that he made his career being a ventriloquist on radio. So, but ultimately, he made his gig because he was really funny.
Right, right.
beyond that, the one album that I did not hear for years upon years, although my father owned it, was an album by Doug Clark and the Hot Nuts.
Well, wait a minute. I feel like I've seen that somewhere.
I feel like you must have. They were like the staple college band that would tour with the risque songs that... I mean, Luther Campbell and Two Live Crew would make Doug Clark blush. I mean, it was nothing really. But it's double entendres as often as not. And it was the kind of stuff that I probably wouldn't even have gotten listening to it. Mm-hmm. But my father was like, well, you don't know. You're not going to listen to that. It wasn't until years later that I finally did get a chance to listen to it. I was like, well, he was right. He was right that I should not have listened to it.
Uh-huh. Do you, so when I originally asked you to pick this one, did you pick it because of its weirdness or because it happened to be one that you felt was worthy of purchasing as a young man?
It was a little of both. Mm-hmm. And it also the third being that it's a obscurity and I have a history of being fond of obscurities.
Sure. Sure. I appreciate that. That is, that's the archaeologist in you.
But it is one that I think that, I can see why I would not necessarily have labels rushing to reissue it, but uh-huh. It's still one that's worth revisiting just to get a glimpse of the comedy of the time.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it also fits into my particular love of anything that came after the First Family, not just for their attempts to recreate it, but like the mass of comedy albums that were created about either Nixon, LBJ, or anybody adjacent to those guys.
Yeah. I mean, like on the back of the album cover, it says other albums by Earl Dowd. I mean, even just starting with the First Family. After that, it's Welcome to the LBJ Ranch,
yep.
Lyndon Johnson's Lonely Hearts Club Band,
uh-huh.
The LBJ Menagerie, uh-huh. Score 3 points, which I don't know what that is. Spiro T. Agnew is a Riot,
mm-hmm.
The Second Coming, and then the Honest to God, We Really Mean It, very last Nixon album, which is a fantastic title.
Oh, yeah,
Not
it is.
Lyndon Johnson's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Yeah. I didn't realize, I don't have Sounds Funny. I'm going to have to, I have most of those in that list. I do not know what Sounds Funny is, and you're now making me realize I have to hunt it down. Who knows if it's any good, but have you heard, okay, so have you, I know that you said you've heard, because it obviously wouldn't be on here, you've heard The First Family Rides Again. How about The First Family Volume 2?
Never actually heard that.
I own it, and I don't think I've heard it either. So I'm gonna have to listen to it. First Family Rides Again is, so that's Richard Nixon. It's Rich Little as, not, it's Rich Little, not Richard Nixon. Rich Little as Reagan.
Yes.
With a guest appearance by Von Meter, if anybody is not aware of that. Von Meter's in there somewhere. I don't remember who the hell he plays, but he looks like a mountain man on the back of the album.
He absolutely does.
It's
yeah.
Insane. What, so did this spark an interest in any, I'm curious, like, does this have a place in your pop culture knowledge other than it being what it is, or did it make you interested in anybody adjacent to it?
It made me continue to be fascinated with comedy albums in general.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't say that I was obsessed with them at the time,
yeah.
But it was definitely something that I was at least fascinated by, and this continued that fascination.
Yeah. What
I
would
say that The First Family Rides Again, ultimately, I probably listened to that arguably more than The First Family.
Really?
Because it was new and it was relevant to me because Reagan was president at the time.
Sure.
And Rich Little was having HBO specials back then, so I was well familiar with him.
Oh, wow.
And then,
okay.
I don't know if you remember who was on that particular album also, but like Hervé Villechaize is on there.
Oh, yes. Canada. Right. Oh,
and,
my God.
Shelley Hack, Michael Richards actually is on there as well.
That I did not realize.
Not that it mattered to me at the time, but mm-hmm. I mean, in retrospect, like, I can't believe Mike Richards is on that.
For sure. Yeah, that's crazy. So what kind of stuff were you hunting down then? Were you going out, just anything that seemed interesting, or were there certain artists you were hunting down?
I mean, I would flip through and see, you know, just what was in the various bins, but I was also looking for a lot of cassettes, comedy cassettes at the time too.
Sure.
Like I know I had a compilation that was like best comedy bits from various comedians over the years, and that's actually where I first heard George Carlin, because it was a pre Seven Things cut. It was the Wino radio.
Oh, sure.
Which I thought was hysterical.
Of course.
And then I very quickly realized it was absolutely not representative of his later material.
Right. So,
but, I mean, that sort of thing, those compilations where you could get a track by various artists, that was kind of helpful in introducing me to various people.
Yeah. That's interesting. I don't know that I have too many. I think most of the compilations I have, because they're on vinyl, are compilations of old radio shit. And I say that with all love. I like old radio just fine. But I call it shit just because that's how I'm going to refer to it. But then I guess on cassettes, you would find plenty of stuff that was all just first released on vinyl. What else was it? Do you remember what else was in that compilation or those compilations that you bought?
I don't. I know that I was listening to a bunch of other radio stuff, too.
Okay.
Because I know the local library had a bunch of tapes. So I would like, that's how I got introduced to Jack Benny and George Burns and Gracie Allen Show and
awesome.
Stuff like that. Yeah. And that was, and of course, at the time, Burns was doing the Oh God sequels, I guess.
Oh, yeah,
huh? He was still very much in the public eye. So that was just kind of bizarre to realize that he had been around that long ago and was still working.
Mm-hmm. He had a fascinating career. He was a guy who, he died, I guess, when I was in high school. And I just remember, I still felt like, oh, that's too soon. You know, it's
yeah, exactly.
It was weird. It was a very, he had this weird place, him. And then like when Bob Hope passed away the year I moved out here. And it's crazy how quickly they forget because they've already renamed the fucking airport. Like, they've already taken his name off of it. It's
I didn't realize. That's horrible.
Yeah, and it's a terrible name, too. I can't remember what they've even named of it. In my head, it's either the Burbank Airport or the Bob Hope Airport. It's
exactly.
I don't, yeah, it's very strange to me.
Now it's just the not Bob Hope Airport.
Exactly. So did, in re-listening, did you get to re-listen to this entire thing and pick out the stuff that you liked the most, or I don't know if you've had a chance to re-listen to it recently.
Of that one, mostly I remember being surprised at how short some of the tracks were.
Uh-huh.
I guess at the time it didn't really occur to me. Some of them were actual individual tracks.
Right.
So I was listening to it in its entirety. And I just figured one ran into the other.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that some of them are as short as they are was kind of a shock.
Mm-hmm.
But
I
really think Dinner with the Kissingers is definitely a spotlight. And then there's a couple other ones. The United Nations, I remember being particularly good as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? You were right earlier. The longest one on here is Disneyland, and it's 7 minutes. The rest of them, none of them go over like 3.5. So there are a ton. I don't think I realized it either, just listening to it. I don't think I noticed that they were individual, that they were that short and that many, because they did feel like they went in and out with one another. It could also be that, you know, Kenny Mars just lulled me into a sense of false security. Just listening
submission.
To it. Yeah, submission. There you go. That's much better. There's this very dumb picture on the inside of the album where the entire audience is wearing Groucho glasses and a nose to reference a
hilarity.
I know, right? To reference a gag in here where he's going through some sort of security. They're asking him if where he got his, basically where he got his Groucho nose and his Groucho glasses. He said, no, these are mine. And then they pull them off of him and he realized it wasn't him the whole time. That he wasn't himself. It was a very dumb, surreal joke. There are bits like that that I actually really like. The stuff that doesn't age, I can ignore, but that doesn't age well. But there's stuff like that that's not too bad. Hey, everybody, it's Jason. This week, Comedy on Vinyl is proudly sponsored by $300 Data Recovery. And there's a very good reason for that. That's because there would be no episode this week without them. And we'd have had to start the entire show from scratch if we hadn't found out about their services. So, as you probably saw online a few weeks ago, my hard drive crashed. That was 6 terabytes, almost 1 million files, and they recovered everything for me. This was not an easy order either. I had 4 drives in one enclosure in a RAID setup, meaning you can't just plug in the drives and copy stuff over. They took my drives, examined them, determined whether or not they needed to open my drives up in their clean room. Luckily, they didn't for me, which sped some things up. And then they copied everything over to a very large USB drive for me. The rates are reasonable, as little as $300 a drive, hence the name. And they don't just work locally. You can send your drives into them. So go to $300datarecovery.com. That's the number 300, then $datarecovery.com. Check them out, and once you do, back that stuff up again. That's a big thing. I had a hard drive that was supposed to be foolproof, and it wasn't. And $300 data recovery helped me out, saving 26 plus years of writing, art, photos, videos, everything, including this podcast. So check out $300 data recovery and let them know that Jason from Comedy on Vinyl sent you. Now, back to the show.
I did notice, looking at the credits more specifically, that there's a credit for Session Supper, Jack in the Box.
I saw that. There's a lengthy Jack in the Box gag where he's just figuring out how to order. He's very excited to order from a Jack in the Box, and it's so dumb. And his wife is, his wife sounds like Katharine Hepburn for some reason. Which
yeah, I would argue that there are some things on the back cover that are funnier than some of the tracks in the
yep.
on the album. Like Fuddle Bagley, a very fine actor, may soon be seen in the motion picture Linda Lovelace for President, which is almost as good an idea as having Linda Lovelace appear in the motion picture Fuddle Bagley for President.
That's stupid.
Ed Peck is a distinguished motion picture actor with many fine films to his credit. His voice is insured with Lloyd's of London for 45 cents.
Jesus Christ. Holy crap. Yeah, I mean, I kind of miss this part of albums where you could just kind of fuck around with the liner notes kind of thing.
Yeah.
Oh, it's pretty great. Boy, oh boy. Do you, so what, outside of this, and I'm not assuming this is one of your favorites, but of all time, do you have some favorite comedy albums that are like, if somebody says, hey, you know, what's some shit I should listen to? I'm curious what your favorite ones are.
I will say that the one that probably grabbed me the most on first listen was, Stephen Wright's I Have a Pony.
Yeah.
That is one that it was to the point where I actually went and saw him when he came to the Chrysler Hall here in Norfolk, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not have been, I guess, maybe 18. I mean, I'd never been to a comedy show ever.
Mm-hmm.
That said a lot that I would even want to plunk down the bucks to go see it.
Yeah.
But I just thought he turned comedy on its head for me anyway. I think it was relatively groundbreaking in his time too, but just for a kid, listen to his album, which is like, this is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like every generation needs a Stephen Wright in terms of like a little bit of mind bending. Like they can do these simple format jokes, but they also are a little mind bendy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the obvious comparison is Hedberg. They're not the same guy, but that, you know, they're similar enough that, you know, I feel like if you were born at a certain time, they're like, oh yeah, Stephen Wright, there's nobody better. He's the guy who tells the best jokes and he does it in the best way. And then there is, you know, I talk to another generation and they're like, oh no, that's Mitch Hedberg. I think they're both equally brilliant. But it's interesting that I guess every generation kind of needs something. There's just sort, I don't know. There's something very pure about that style. And it could just be that it's as simple as like, this is just a really well-written joke and it's told almost as though the guy's reading it off a napkin, but doing it very well. It's just so simple and so deadpan. Did you discover Stephen Wright through the album or on TV, on a special?
I feel like it was probably maybe a Tonight Show appearance.
Okay.
Because I was when I would have been finally staying up to watch it without having to sneak it.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure that's where it was. And then I went and bought the cassette and fell in love with it hard.
As, you know, as you should, probably wore it out, I'm assuming. Did you ever make copies for anybody of any comedy albums for people?
I don't think of that one. Actually, one of the other ones I was going to mention that I know I did make a copy for somebody or a couple people was Albert Brooks' Comedy Minus One.
Yeah.
Man, his story, the memoirs of an opening act is fantastic, but the rewriting the national anthem, I will find myself singing bits and pieces of those various alternate anthems. Hey, world!
I always forget that there are, those albums are so groundbreaking and strange that I forget that there's any stand-up on them. Just because it seems anathema to what he's doing. It seems like, no, I'm doing these very well-produced, but also, no, one of them's, well, at least one of them is entirely half stand-up. I can't imagine what it would be like seeing him as a working stand-up at all.
Probably blow my mind.
Yeah.
I'm sure I would be in hysterics.
For sure.
Every time I've ever seen him do any stand-up bits on, I don't think I've ever seen, I think he did Sullivan, but I never actually saw that, but I know. I've seen him do stand-up maybe on the Tonight Show or something.
Sure, yeah. I guess I know him. It's so weird because I know him best. What do I know him best as? I think I know him best as a reference a lot of comedians make. I think I barely missed seeing his movies at the right time, hearing his albums in their time. I love his albums once I was introduced to them, but he's a guy who I think I just barely sort of missed. I knew him as a in the latter day parts. He's still performing, but I still knew him as a guy who was like, hey, it's super special that he's doing The Simpsons a lot. It's so funny to discover him late.
I want to say even that album I discovered late. The first album, first movie of his that I really, really fell for was Mom, with Debbie Reynolds. But I'd seen him in Broadcast News, and I thought he was hysterical in that. And then Mom I saw, and then I started doing the digging in the back catalog, and that's how I found like Real Life and Lost in America, which is one of the greatest comedies ever.
Did you?
And Modern Romance, too, is great.
Sure. These are all movies that I know of and have not seen. Please don't judge me, anybody.
I'm not judging you, but you definitely need to remedy that. They're very funny, and 90% of them hold up.
Yeah. This is what everybody says. I would like to give it a shot, especially since Albert Brooks has yet to piss me off as a, you know, he's not an old cranky comedian, he's just an old comedian. So I'll give him that. He's still funny.
Well, he's cranky, but not in a annoying way, generally.
Yeah, not in the why does the world have to keep changing and I'm left behind way. He doesn't pull that. He's too smart for that, it seems.
Yeah, he's on Twitter and he's very, very funny on Twitter.
He's so funny on there. Have you interviewed him?
No, he's definitely one of my dream interviews.
Yeah. What about, I'm curious who your first, like, in terms of, because you've interviewed a ton of people, who is the first person you might consider super legendary or a hero, or and how early in your career did that happen?
I would say the first one I interviewed who I was legitimately nervous about interviewing was Harold Ramis.
Oof. Yeah.
And it actually went really well. I was extremely nervous just because it was right after I started working full time for the website bullseye.com.
Uh-huh.
And I was still kind of not entirely used to talking to really awesome people,
uh-huh.
lack of a better phrase. But he was very cool, very low key, very prone to laughing at comments I made, which helped a lot too.
That's nice.
I just remember saying, do you think Club Paradise is destined to be realized as an underrated classic at some point?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I think Club Paradise is best appreciated while under the influence of various substances.
Oh, man. That's a delight. Let's see here. Give me a second. My brain just completely... I had a question, completely lost it. Let's see here.
Well, I do know another comedy legend that was a highlight, in particular, Tim Conway.
Oh, man.
He stands as having the best start of any interview with a comedian.
Really?
Where he called me as he was supposed to. I answered the phone, hello, and he said, Will Harris's office.
Damn
and I did not know what to say for several seconds.
Damn it, that's good. Oh, that's brilliant. That's a guy who kind of feel there are guys who live comedy and are obnoxious, and then there are those guys who live comedy and are just there to make you laugh. That is a delight. Oh, that's brilliant. Are you boy oh boy. What's let's go back to this album a little bit. Is there anybody else on this album who actually, is there anybody in here who you've crossed paths with, or are these all too old for you to have run into? I mean, you weren't, Mel Blanc was dead by the time you started, I assume, or at least
he was. I've not actually interviewed anyone on here. I was Facebook friends with Chuck McCann, who has since passed away.
Yeah.
I probably interviewed him, but it just never, I never had the outlet that I would have felt comfortable doing him for,
because sure.
I wanted to go as deep as possible.
Right. How about Rich Little?
No, he's someone I'd like to interview, although I've heard him on a couple of different podcasts, and he comes across more than a little bit egotistical.
Oh, really?
Just being the impressionist.
Oh, okay. I see. I guess that's to be expected, I suppose. Do you know, where is it? I have it somewhere. He had his own album that came out around the same time as The First Family. That was about, oh God, is it called The First Canadian President? It's something to that effect. It is a First Family, but it is about, it's not called The First Canadian President, but it is about the Prime Minister of Canada. And it's basically supposed to be The First Family. And boy, oh boy, I'll tell you, if you're not Canadian, I've never been more lost in a comedy album in my life. it is. I tried so hard, and I'm like, oh, I bet that laugh means this, maybe. And it's just like, oh, it's rough. It is real rough.
Actually, I just pulled it up here. My Fellow Canadians.
Thank you. That's what it's called. Christ, why did I think it was called that? Yeah, there we go. My Fellow Canadians, 1963.
Whew. What's funny is it says starring Rich Little with Les Lie.
Mm-hmm.
Les Lie was on You Can't Do That on Television.
Oh my God! Wait, was he?
Barf.
God. Thank you. There we go. Yep. I knew. That's amazing.
I can't believe I pulled that, but I immediately, as soon as I saw that name, I was like, "That's that. Yep, that's that guy."
Uh-huh. Yeah. This is one of those. Or yeah, for me, I tried so hard. There are a couple jokes that I remember laughing hard at because they were just basic jokes. And then the rest of it, again, this is why one of the reasons I like to have Canadians on the podcast, I'm going to have to run this by a Canadian and be like, is this as funny as the audience is giving it credit? Maybe. It's also from 50 years ago. So it's hard to say. There's just this, the First Family really kicked off this weird pattern. I mean, who wouldn't? If it's the greatest selling album of all time, not just comedy at the time, why wouldn't you try and make your own, I suppose?
Of course. It's inevitable, but still.
Yeah, they're most, I own a lot of them, and most of them are shit. But this one, I don't know. Henry I is charming. I will give it that. It is charming for all of its racist caricatures and fumbles. The rest of it is charming.
It coasts by thanks to Kenneth Marlowe. I think it's what it comes down to.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah. It's worth re-listening to Taking Care of Business at least a few times. I think people should give it a
look. Most definitely.
So this is one that you have on vinyl, and I totally get it. Like, most of the albums I bought early on were cassette as well, or I think the first comedy album I ever listened to was on cassette. Do you have any kind of a collection to speak of vinyl comedy albums? I don't expect people to, but I'm curious.
Not really. I think probably more on CD than I do on vinyl. And even then, it's not that substantial, really. I mean,
sure.
I pick up cassettes here and there. I know I had like Eddie Murphy and...
of course.
I had David Steinberg's Booga Booga cassette.
That's amazing. I had my interview, David Steinberg.
I was proud to tell him that I had a copy of that, and he seemed very pleased.
Really? I heard him the other day. I have this album that I decided to listen to, and I since regret it. It is a Best of the Hollywood Squares. And
I have that album, yes. Woo. The Zingers.
Oh, boy. It's terrible. There are some parts that are great, but it is, for the most part, horrible. I think the best part is Rosemarie. She might be my favorite part of it.
Not Paul Lynde?
Paul Lynde is fine, but... And I like Paul Lynde.
He's fine.
I mean, he's great. It's just... Even some of his are like, oh my God, like who wrote that fucking thing? Like, my favorite one of his is not even on there, which is, and I've done it on the show before, and I think it's maybe one of the more famous, which is, well, what do you say when a man falls overboard? Or when a man falls off a ship? Man overboard. What do you say when a woman falls off of a ship? Full speed ahead. And it's just like, all right. And that was just somehow not on there, and I'm not sure why that is. Maybe it hadn't happened yet, but whew. That's a stretch of an album right there. Again, this is stuff that nobody's going to bother making an album of today. You might see some amateur would put it together as a compilation on YouTube, and it might be forgotten. It might for a minute go viral. This is a period of time when you could but can you imagine having the forethought to know, yeah, I'm going to put the effort and the money into making something that could be entirely ephemeral or ethereal, or I'm using the wrong word, but you know what I'm saying.
I do, yes.
I'm not using the right word, but something that will not necessarily last, although everybody knew Henry Kissinger was there to stay, one assumes. So, boy.
And he's still.
Mm-hmm. Isn't he ever? do you, I'm curious then, I don't know what's wrong with me today. Well, I apologize. It's just, it's a weird, I'm going to make a note here. I fuck up at this time. let's see. Well, cause you know, it's interesting. I like, cause the thing is, I think I normally interview comedians so I can ask them about their influences. So I'm trying to figure out a way to ask you, who is a journalist, also a funny person, but like, have you ever, you know what, actually, let me ask you this. Have you ever written comedy, performed in comedy, or have you always been a journalist?
I have always been a journalist. There have been occasions where I've done a little bit of comedy writing for like my wife and daughter and I have been doing the 48-hour film festival.
For yes, the past couple right, of right, right, right.
I've done the scripts for those, and they've been decidedly of a comedic bent. I've done a few like sketches for friends for like in high school. A guy did an assembly and they had me write something for him for that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where my the limit of my writing thus far.
Okay. Yeah. No. I'm all.
Yeah, well, I think that I did actually try to write a comedy pilot for a contest once, and it deservedly, I heard nothing back about it.
Well, I mean, so if let's talk about those few times you've written comedy, then who would you think? Who then would you count among your greatest influences?
Well, they always say to write what you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know if I even have a specific influence per se. I mean, I've always been a big fan of ensemble sitcoms.
Okay.
So, I mean, stuff like WKRP, Cheers, MASH. I mean, certainly guys like Larry Gelbart would be right up there.
Mm-hmm.
Hugh Wilson, who did WKRP.
Mm-hmm.
James L. Brooks, sure. Definitely an influence there, I'm sure. I mean, Cameron Crowe to some extent as well.
Okay. So yeah, you've got a number of influences. How about?
I don't know if they actually show, but they're influences.
Yeah, well, you know, rarely do they. That's the one thing, though. Is like you ask somebody who their influences are, and then I sometimes make the mistake of, well, how would we know that? Or like, where do we see that in your work? Now, I don't know. I just absorbed the influence and moved on. You know, that's kind of how influences tend to go. So for this album, let's say nobody's ever heard it before, because they probably haven't. I want to know why recommend it, but also like who to recommend it based on. Like, I'm assuming Kenneth Mars is your reason for recommending it, but I want to know what your reason would be if you do recommend listening to it. What is it?
I recommend listening to it if you like political comedy, particularly political comedy from the 70s.
Sure.
Or of material from the 70s, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Kenneth Mars is definitely your reason to listen to it. And if there's any gateway drug, it's definitely going to be that taking care of business, because that will confirm that he's got the impression down.
For sure.
And if you like that, then it's definitely going to be worth at least giving it a shot.
That's true.
Earl Dowd, like I say, he was also, as much as anything, the reason that I picked it up in the first place, just because of his credentials in comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever enjoy any of his albums, those are reasons to at least give this a shot.
Absolutely. And I think it's one of those I may have to listen to again. I rarely do that, but I feel like it's worth it. I feel like I should give Kenny Mars his due and Earl Dowd. I think at some point, like, I'm going to have to do a whole episode or series of episodes on Earl Dowd's records, just because there's so many.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
And I mean, if I'm a guy who loves comedy albums and likes to make them myself,
Yourselves.
I have several selves. We haven't talked about this much. But I don't know. If I love him that much, like, it would be nice to discover his entire catalog, for good or bad. And because there's, I don't know, they are efforts put together for a certain time period, but they also, the fact that there's anything that holds up is kind of amazing to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because you would think that the references would be completely lost, mm-hmm. And like I say, it's not like I had any idea what the hell he was on about.
Right.
When I first listened to him. Yeah, he just sounded funny.
Yeah.
And that's what got me through it.
It's perfect. I love it. So where can people find you, find your work, Is there anything upcoming that you can talk about? Like maybe a book? I don't know how much you're allowed to talk about it.
I can talk a little bit about it.
Oh, good.
Currently, people can find me on the AV Club when they're of a mind to let me write for them.
Mm-hmm.
Or on vanityfair.com sometimes. Vulture, I've been doing a bunch of stuff for lately. I just did my debut for Decider. So
oh, cool.
Plenty of interviews out there here and there.
Awesome.
But beyond that, yes, I am currently in the process of working on a book project with David Zucker, Jim Abrams, and Jerry Zucker about their career. At the very least, I can suggest that there's an airplane in it somewhere.
Okay, good. Good. I'm looking very much forward to that. That is something I cannot wait for.
I will say it's been a blast just the process of constructing it thus far.
Yeah.
So whatever it ends up being, I can assure you that if even a third of it from what I've gotten at this point is in, mm-hmm. it's going to be hysterical.
Ah, fuck. I can't wait.
Hysterical and revelatory, even for comedy fans who think they know everything about these movies.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, can't wait. Are you at Nonstop Pop everywhere?
I am at Nonstop Pop on Twitter. I guess I am on Facebook too, come to think of it. Yes, it would seem that I am. Instagram, I can't tell you, but I can find out very, very quickly.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's the same there too. It tends to be.
Well, you're A, worth a follow. B, people have to read your stuff. I mean, you have a variety. I mean, so we did talk briefly about Random Roles. Are there other like sort of columns that people should keep a lookout for, or just look out for your name?
I've been doing the underrated column for Vulture.
Oh, okay, which is yeah.
Talk to comedians about various comedic projects, whether it's a comedian, a comedy show, a sketch group, anything comedy related, just something that they like that isn't getting enough attention.
Mm. Okay,
and
awesome.
That's fun. I talked to Adam Resnick, who did Cabin Boy. He talked about a W.C. Fields film that I wasn't aware of.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So it's fun to get people to dig deep and figure out what they want to spotlight.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That's so good. Did you find out who you are on Instagram?
Yes, it is Will Harris, NVA.
Okay.
INV. Yes.
Awesome. Will, this has been a blast.
Glad we finally made it happen. Man.
Yeah, me too. And you're welcome back anytime. And if you're in LA, we should do this in person at some point.
Absolutely. At some point, I need to speak to the virtues of Jeff Altman as a comedian and not have his reputation hang solely on Pink Lady and Jeff.
Awesome. Well, good. At some point, I mean, I like you keeping it obscure. That's on brand, but it's also helpful for this show. it actually makes me try. I don't have to talk about Steve Martin every time, which I'm fine doing, but not every time. I will tell people to go to Celery Sound Records. That's my little sketch comedy record label where you will find Paul Dooley's 1961 album. And there's not much up there yet, but go to comedyarchive.org. I am putting together mini comedy archives that I'm working on and linking to other people's comedy archives and other archives that have comedy in them. I'm going to say comedy and archive 10 more times. That is about it. Again, Will, thank you for doing the show. And
pleasure.
Thanks everybody for listening. And as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. You can email us at podcast@comedyonvinyl.com. You can also send snail mail to Stolen Dress Entertainment, P.O. Box 805, Burbank, California, 91503. Subscribe to Comedy on Vinyl on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you can find podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and write us a review. It helps. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Comedy on Vinyl, or find everything in one place at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune in to the new Stand Up Records channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast. This episode is also underwritten by $300 Data Recovery. Visit $300datarecovery.com to get a quote on their highly recommended data recovery services. Visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, watch videos, and imbibe freely of our multimedia content going back 15 plus years.